Welcome to the golf edition of Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's Summer Golf Wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define golf across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk golf with sports commentator Ben Hook and State Golf Representative Sophie Hilditch.
Thanks, Wallace. G'day, everyone. Sophie, two more sleeps. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling a little bit nervous. My first time with a media accreditation for the Australian Open. Well, first time of media accreditation ever. I'm a bit nervous and I'm hoping I can lean on you a little bit and our producer Wallace to help me out and not let me make a fool of myself.
Most wonderful time of the year, Soph. This is like Christmas for you, I reckon. You, when you're a like 8, 9, 10-year-old, you would have been that excited two nights out from Christmas. And this is Sophie Christmas being a member of the media for the Australian Open where Rory McIlroy is teeing it up.
Oh, this is absolutely Christmas, except I've been told by my co-host that I'm not allowed to wear the hat that I have customised just to try and make sure that Rory sees me.
Yeah. Look, it's not for me. This is for you. I don't know that you're going to garner the respect that you're going to hope for as part of the media pack if you're there in a Rory fangirl cap. I think that's what it says, doesn't it?
It's fan club, actually.
Right.
I don't discriminate. I have boys and women wearing this hat, and it's very tasteful, thank you. I've chosen great colours. They're very bright. They're very noticeable, but it's very tasteful, and I have matched every single outfit to the colours that I have used.
Can I suggest that it does not match your media accreditation? It's one or the other. You can decide. I don't care what it is, but they don't go together.
All right. Well, we'll have fangirl Sophie and media Sophie, and it'll be two very different Sophies that people may meet throughout
the tournament.
Talk about
fangirl Sophies. Why don't you start the show off with Sophie Star for this week?
Well, Hookie, I have a first time in Hooked on Sport history, well, at least Hooked on Sport history since I signed up. We have a Sophie Star repeat.
I know.
It's a big call, but I have actually gone Queensland golfer Hannah Reeves. She has gone back-to-back-to-back wins on the WPGA. It's her third straight win since turning professional at the Dubbo in a thriller playoff against Justice Bozzio. Look, I mean, I just couldn't go past her. She turns professional and wins her first three tournaments. I mean, ridiculous. Hannah Reeves, you are an absolute Sophie Star.
My vague recollection is the last time that she was Sophie Star, you kind of gave yourself a little bit of credit for being her last playing partner in an amateur event before she turned professional. It was those final words of advice that you passed on that has led her to these glorious heights.
No. Okay, you have to go read back the tapes. I actually said she played the SA Amateur. She was not a playing partner of mine. It was the pep talk, though, that I gave her after the 36-hole finish that got her over the line.
I've got no doubt. Great Sophie Star, and I'm looking forward. You'll do the review for us on where we're at with the WPGA event, which is at Narrabri at the moment. Looking forward to that. Sophie, Ben's best for the week. I want to take you up to the Highcombe Golf Club. They've got a board member at the club. His name is Dan Ward. Now, he's a pretty fit lad, Dan, and you would be well aware that we've just completed Movember, so all of these idiot men walking around with ridiculous moustaches if they didn't have one already. Dan took it a bit of a different way. He decided to raise money for the Movember campaign for men's health that he would do 30,000 push-ups for the month, 1,000 push-ups a day, which in its own right is absolutely incredible. He did the final 50 push-ups on the bar at the club in front of around, looked like about 100 members and family yesterday up at the club. So I just thought that was worth a bit of a shout-out. He's obviously a very keen golfer, a very popular and respected member of the club. So Dan Ward from the Highcombe Golf Club, 30,000 push-ups for the month of November, 1,000 a day, the final 50 on the bar at the club. Probably wouldn't go quite so comfortably at your club, Royal Adelaide, but it kind of fit the bill beautifully at Highcombe. And that's a place that we need to cover at some point. So if we're doing Tanunda Pines today, I haven't played Highcombe for a little while, so we might have to get up there and play it ourselves before we give it the once over. But yeah, Dan Ward, Ben's best for this week.
I love it. I would love to go visit Highcombe again. It's been a while since I've been up there, but just as long as they don't make me do any, was it push-ups, did you say, or pull-ups? Either or.
Push-ups.
Either or. Don't want to be doing
either. Just a lazy thousand for you after 18 holes, Soph, you'll be fine. Hey, Australian PGA, incredible event. David Puig wins, the Spaniard. I just want to know your thoughts on the event and the winner in particular. What did you make of it all?
Oh, I mean, the winner. Incredible. He carded a bogey-free 5-under on the final day to take a lead by 2 shots. A pretty comfortable lead, to be honest. A lot of people were just falling away as he was charging through that final round, and he really just wasn't making any mistakes. He led over our own Minwoo Lee and Mark Leishman, who were a little bit in it, but kind of just failed at the final little hurdle. He also won over Wenyi Ding, which is a Chinese golfer, an absolutely incredible golfer, someone that I kind of want to touch on because he actually played at the Royal Melbourne Asia Pacific and he came second in that. And obviously the Australian Open's going to be played at Royal Melbourne, so someone that I want to speak about a bit later on in the show. But look, I thought the event was incredible, Ben. They obviously had some pretty poor weather coming in. There were some preferred lies, some softer greens, the scoring, you know, the scoring reflected that. But I think Royal Queensland pulled through, the spectators pulled through, and it was an awesome event to watch. I imagine live, but also on the screen.
A couple of things. All your points are excellent, Soph, and we will wheel back to Wenyi Ding. You know that he gave up a spot at the Masters, which is probably the most incredible story of the lot. Can I just say the one thing I really loved about the venue and the way it was set up, I'm always a believer that the quality of a course and the quality of a setup is determined by someone who can separate themselves from the pack. I get really frustrated with golf courses, in particular on the US PGA Tour, that are always set up soft and kind of protect you from really bad mistakes, whereas Royal Queensland was set up that you could score. I mean, 18 under was the winning score, so it wasn't set up super duper hard. But at the same time, there are elements of that course where if you get yourself out of position, it can be very difficult to get yourself back in. And as much as we saw a lot of birdies over the course of the week, we saw some double bogeys as well. And the beautiful thing for me was that Puig was the best player, and therefore he managed to separate himself. I mean, he was 4 shots up with about 5 holes to play. It ended up a 2-shot margin, but it was a relatively comfortable win. And I think that was because the course was set up absolutely perfectly for what you want to see for a golf event the week out from what we regard as a major. Of course, the Australian Open is not a major, but we want to see a really difficult, tough, true test next week at Royal Melbourne. And I thought Royal Queensland was the absolutely perfect setup. The other thing I'd make is this point. Kazuma Kibori, the New Zealander, who was in and amongst the lead for all three of the first days, he is dead set top gun with driver. He's a poofer. But he could actually compete in this sort of event. He doesn't hit it far at all, one of the shortest on tour. But because he's accurate and because he can hit to the right parts of the fairways and get the best angle in on those greens that are pretty tricky, those greens. I mean, look, he ejected himself on Sunday with a 75, but the fact that obviously, the longer you hit it, that's obviously an advantage, but it's not a super advantage at a course like Royal Queensland. A guy like Joaquin Niemann, longest in world golf right now, missed the cut. Kibori, shortest in world golf at the moment and amongst the professional ranks, was right up there until the last day. And I think that's another big tick for Royal Queensland as well, the way that course was set up, that you didn't have to be super long to still be competitive. And that's another thing that I think really stands out for me. So, I thought it was a great event. I thought it was the perfect lead up for what's ahead of us this week. I get the feeling we won't see it at Royal Queensland this year. I think the Royal Queensland members have probably said, yeah, we've done enough, it's someone else's turn, and that's reasonable. But I just want to congratulate Royal Queensland on how they set up this event.
Well, don't forget, Hookie, as well, Royal Queensland is gearing up for the 2032 Olympics. So I think they might be doing some course renovations and some, I reckon, re-turfing as well. So Royal Queensland might not look exactly the same in the coming years either.
No, I probably won't. Look, it's a flat piece of land, and you know, it's right alongside the Brisbane River, and that doesn't really feature on the golf course. And I wonder if they'll make some wholesale changes to try and bring that in. Mm. But it is a flat piece of land. It doesn't necessarily look great on TV, except for the fact they have those beautiful Claytonized sandy waste areas that I think really stood out to me as well. The Aussies, what did you make of them? Start with Mark Leishman for me.
Yeah. I was relatively impressed with Mark Leishman, but obviously I was a bit disappointed as he was coming through that final stretch. I mean, he hasn't he hasn't played like a whole heap of golf in the past few years after joining LIV. And I hate to say it, I am a massive advocate for LIV in South Australia. I think it's great, but I do think he is having to take some rust, particularly off those iron shots that he's hitting down the stretch. Yeah, it was a little bit disappointing in the end, but I was pretty impressed for these first 3 days.
Adam Scott,
look, what was he, 6 shots off? Beautiful player. I'd love to be able to replicate that swing every single day of the week. I reckon, I don't want to jinx it, but he's looking pretty good for Royal Melbourne, I want to say. I think he's a strong contender. He strikes the hell out of the golf ball, and if he can get that putter rolling, he's pretty long, he's gained distance, I want to say, as he's got older in his career. I think he's experienced. I think he is someone to look out for. I think Royal Queensland, 6 shots back. I wouldn't have said he was a contender in this tournament, but I think he's in a good, solid spot leading into the Aussie Open.
Minwoo?
I mean, Minwoo Lee, what a ball striker. Just incredible. Again, he fell apart a little bit towards the end. But he is definitely someone to look out for at Royal Melbourne. The way that kid strikes his irons, he was world class. Obviously fell short like we spoke about and I keep talking about and keep harping on about. But I think the way he strikes his irons, the way he positions himself off the golf course, he's perfectly fit for Royal Melbourne. I, again, think this was a great kickstart to his Australian stretch.
Round me out with your assessment of Cameron Smith.
Well, obviously the biggest disappointment out of all those lead Australians, he missed the cut and it was a pretty poor effort. I think, what was it, 2 over? He was blaming a couple of lies that he got. He was visibly pretty disappointed when he came off the ground. He has just had a young child in the past few months and he openly admits that he hasn't played a lot of golf and golf has been on his mind. And do you know what, Hooky? I think it took some bravery saying that. Be pretty hard sitting at home, not playing and wanting to get out there and letting it just fester in your brain. He hasn't won an Aussie Open. I think it's something that he really wants on his mantelpiece. And I think that showed at the PGA, he's got a lot of work to do. For someone who is so good at short game and making up and downs, he made barely any up and downs in his first 2 days and it was disappointing. And around Royal Queensland, he's going to need that creativity that he's normally known for, those putts that he normally sinks. And I would be working pretty hard next, it's only 2 days now, but he should be doing some serious work.
I'm reminded, Soph, that this time last year he was scathing about the Kingston Heath setup and complained that it was too soft and was set up because it was a mixed event, women's and men's Australian Open combined. He needs it soft. He needs a lot of rain between now and Thursday, I think, to be competitive at Royal Melbourne, because if that's set up fiery, he's just not playing well enough. He needs actually the protection of a soft golf course and then just hope that his putter gets hot, because his form at the moment is nowhere near it. And it's a sad state of affairs for
Hooky,
who was by far and away our best golfer 2 years ago.
Yeah, but he had a soft golf course at Royal Queensland. It wasn't firm. Like, by Royal Queensland standards, it wasn't firm. So I don't have high hopes for him at the Aussie Open. I really do hope he proves me wrong. He's incredible to watch play. And when he does get himself out of trouble, I absolutely love it. I mean, just go back to his St. Andrews win at the Open. That was insane golf. The course management was incredible. I just don't think he has the runs on the board. I was severely disappointed. Someone that I normally love watching.
Thought the South Australians were excellent over the course of the week. Sophie Wade almost be finished in a solid tie for 25th. 13 birdies for the week, made 0 in round 2, so that was probably the one stickler for Wade. 17 pars, 1 bogey for a 1 over 72. in a tournament with 18 under, if you go through an entire round without a birdie, that does make it really tough. But I think Wade will feel like he's in reasonable shape heading into the Australian Open next week, where he's got a special invite. Jack Thompson, 73, 65, 69, 72. I mean, his best is so good, isn't it, Soph? Eagled 15 in round two, then doubled it in round four. You know, the game giveth and it taketh away. So I think his finish probably looks worse than it was. He was, what was he, at 5 under, I think he was. Adam Bland, T48, 4 under. I mean, the renaissance of Adam Bland continues. His middle two rounds were very, very good. Got nothing going on the last day, but it was great to see him back in the top half of fields routinely once again. He gets into the Australian Open on the basis of the fact of what he's done at the start of the Australasian Tour this year, in what they call the mini order of merit. So thrilled to see him back in an Australian Open. Jack Buchanan was also in a tie for 48 at 4 under. Made 4 birdies and 4 bogeys on the final day. Same as Adam Bland, I reckon. He's regularly making cuts now and around the mark, and we just keep a watch on him. He could really surprise one day if he can pull it all together. I mean, he'll love 4 birdies in a day. He'll be filthy with 4 bogeys. I just reckon he's right on the edge. And then Lockie Parker, also tie for 48, 4 under. Just can't quite string 4 rounds together, Soph. He went 2 under, even 3 under, 1 over. But another that we can be really proud of, I reckon. And he's had a bit of a habit of starting tournaments very well and then falling away the longer it goes on. And if he can just get a bit of a start and, I don't know, hold that form over the course of 4 days, he's a real chance. Jack Carter was the other one who played in the tournament from South Australia. He finished at 2 over. No, sorry, finished at even par, I beg your pardon. So no slouch. I mean, that's a good effort, even par. 4 birdies, 4 bogeys in both rounds. So again, he was just a little bit erratic. But look, Joaquin Neiman and Rafa Cabrera-Bello both finished at even par for the tournament. So no slouch for Jack. I'm pretty sure he's got a start this coming week as well. So that's the South Australians. All in all, pretty good, I thought, Soph. Not too bad at all. Can I take you back over the oceans and to the race to the CME Globe? It's a week old now, but just take us through what happened. Gino Titicul, famous in this podcast, of course, because Grace Kim, polished her off in France at the Evian, but she took out the race to the CME Globe. What did you make of it all?
Incredible. I mean, obviously, Gino is world number one, and she really showed it. She claimed victory at the Ritz-Carlton Golf Resort in Florida. She was 26 under. She had a 6-shot lead going into the tournament, got down to about a 2-shot lead, but look, came strong. She had a 4-shot lead in the end and held a birdie putt just to absolutely solidify it. You know, in her last 5 tournaments, she's shot 105 under par. Just,
oh my goodness.
Incredible golfer. She hasn't won a major like you spoke about, our own Grace Kim. And God, I'm sad. I'm not at all sad about this, but she chipped in just to keep going, and I'm so proud of that girl. That's absolutely incredible. Gino hasn't won a major yet, but look, she's someone to look out for. But do you know what? It was Aussie Steph Kiriakou, which I keep harping on about. I keep telling everyone to watch out for this amazing, incredible golfer. She shot a 6 under par in her final round. It was one of the best rounds of the day, but she had a hole-in-one on the par 3 8th. It was unfortunately not captured by the broadcasters, but amazing. She is someone to look out for when she comes back to Australia.
So if while you are hot, I want you to tell me where we are at the halfway point of the Women's New South Wales Open regional qualifier. It's played in Narrabri. Of course, I do not know, but a couple of South Australians going very nicely.
Yeah, we have SA golfer Crystal Blum, who's leading into the final round by 1 shot over Justice Bozzio, who lost in the playoff the week before. We also have Caitlin Pierce, a friend of the pod. She's sitting 2 shots back at even par. So our SA girls are absolutely having an outstanding performance in this tournament so far, and I wish them all the best of luck. Looks like a pretty tough course, pretty gusty. Greens are looking pretty tough. I think you can watch it live on KO at 11 a.m. tomorrow, and I encourage our listeners to do so because there are some outstanding golfers. There's a lot on the line. There's spots for the New South Wales Open, so I know those girls are absolutely giving it their all.
Yeah, I'd love to see Crystal break through. She had a win, I reckon, in Sweden about 3 years ago, and I think had a chance to go on to the LET because that was on the secondary tour, the Challenger Tour, whatever they call there. I think she had enough points to go on and take sort of limited status on the LET Tour. Didn't take it, and it probably hasn't worked in her best interest in the short term, but I'd love to see her breakthrough here because I just reckon she's the player that only needs a little bit of confidence and she's away. Same with Caitlin, quite frankly. I mean, Caitlin's just got so much game, and I reckon with all of these guys, it just needs to flick the switch on one weekend, get it right at the right time, and suddenly you've got exemptions into all sorts of tournaments and you can play with a bit of house money there. So I'm wishing them both all the best. Tiny bit disappointing. It was Australian Open qualifying today. The South Australians all bombed out. At Spring Valley, Max McArdle finished at 4 over. At Cranbourne, Peter Cook finished at 2 over. Jack Tanner at 7 over. Really tough course in Cranbourne. And Blair Christie, the amateur, did not finish. I'm not sure if he even teed it up, but he was a DNF, Blair Christie. And then at Woodlands, Liam Georgiadis, boy from Grange, was 3 over and a tee for 32. So, unfortunately, none of the South Australians that were hopeful of getting in via qualifying, always tough to get in, like 6 spots for about 250 players, I think, Soph. But let's talk about the Australian Open and what's ahead of us and what's ahead of you in particular. What are you most excited about? Who do you think are the players that we probably need to keep a bit of an eye on as we head towards Thursday?
Well, I mean, Grand Slam, Rory McIlroy, the 2025 major winner. How can you go past my Irishman, my hoo pass hooky, I have to say, onto the podcast right now? I am going with my boyfriend, Darcy, but he is my hoo pass. So all warnings out if he's listening to this podcast.
Poor old Darcy might be left out in the corridor for an hour or two.
No, well, Rory, how can you go past him? I actually just can't wait to see how he plays this course. I mean, obviously he hits the driver so far, but Royal Melbourne isn't a course that you need to hit the driver that far. There's a lot of placements off the tee. There's a lot of course management, and putting, which is not Rory's strong suit, is something that you need to do. And also creativity around the greens, which again is probably not something when you think about creativity and greens and, you know, playing all different shots. Rory isn't probably the player that comes to my mind, but you know what? I'd love a Rory win. I'm all for it. But do you know what I would much prefer? A Minwoo Lee win. That's what I'm after. That's what I think we should all be looking out for. The way he stripes his irons, I think I'd be just amazed and just so impressed if we could get a Minwoo Lee out there. So that's someone else that I think we should be looking out for. Also, funny enough, a bit left of center. No one's probably talking about it because I don't know why they would, but I'm actually kind of interested in see how Alex Fitzpatrick, which is Matt Fitzpatrick's brother, comes out and plays this course. He's been playing in a lot of the Aussie Opens. He's been coming down. He is a ball striker. He's meticulous. I think he's someone that our listeners should go out. I don't think this will be his breakthrough win or anything like that, but I think he's a player that in the future is someone to look out for.
He's a really good player, Alex Fitzpatrick, and he's had some very, very good results. So if the one thing that stands out to me, I was just making a note of the new breed of LIV golfers that we are seeing that are coming to play events like this because it gives them opportunities to get into majors. So the winner of the Australian Open gets into the Open Championship in particular. So Joaquin Niemann, Ballester, who the Spaniard who won only last week at the PIF Sortie event, Puig, who we've seen win at the Australian PGA last week, Ortiz, Munoz, Kolsarts, Caleb Surratt, Ben Campbell, Ogletree, Sam Horsfield, Tom McKibben, who I don't think is playing in this event. Ben Campbell is playing in this event. All of these guys that we're seeing as the next generation of LIV golfers, it's almost like the worst thing that happened to LIV was that they signed all of these older guys to longer contracts and felt obliged to keep them in. And I just reckon right now they are really well-placed with their young guys. And, you know, 7 or 8 of the names that I've mentioned are going to be playing in this Australian Open event because they're after world rankings points and they're after exemptions into majors. It's almost like they've stumbled across the fact that they would have been better off, instead of being a closed shop with all their contracted oldies, getting these guys in and giving them starts and giving them opportunities might actually be the best thing for LIV, because I reckon right now there's half a dozen guys. I'll put it to you like this, Soph. There's 10 guys on LIV that I reckon are past it and don't need to be there anymore, but they're contracted and they're stuck there. But I also equally reckon there's 10, 11, 12 guys on LIV that I'm really excited to see what they can do. And it's almost more interesting for me, even than a John Rahm or a Cameron Smith, I want to see Tom McKibben. I want to see Caleb Surratt. I want to see Ben Campbell and, you know, Joaquin Neiman, obviously. You know, he's not a new up-and-comer anymore. But these are the guys that I'm really excited about. And I think for the Australian Open to not link with LIV, they haven't officially done it, but they're getting these guys in. You have a look at the tournament invites and a few of them have got LIV links, right? So that's what's really exciting for me is that this, I call them B-list, but that's probably not fair. They're B-plus list players that we've got a lot of at the Australian Open this year. So yeah, Adam Scott, Rory McIlroy, obviously they are the superstars of the event, but I'm really excited to see those sorts of guys. Wen Yi-ding was another one that we talked about who's not on the LIV Tour, but turned his back on starts as an amateur in two majors to go and play on the DP World Tour. All of these guys I'm really excited about, and I think it makes it an open event. I'm pretty happy to lay someone like Minwoo Lee. I think there are guys who are a little bit more controlled with their ball over the course of 72 holes that you're going to need to be at Royal Melbourne. So it's those sorts of guys I think are going to be really interesting to watch over the course of the week.
Yeah, valid point. And like you said, Royal Melbourne's going to play a bit like Royal Queensland. It doesn't need the big hitters. So there's a lot of players that you wouldn't necessarily see on the PGA Tour that you've got to be looking out for. Shorter hitters are, you know, there's got to be some holes that they might be a bit further back and not probably prime position, but there's a lot of holes where they'll be able to take on the exact same corners as the bigger hitters.
Yeah, and the composite course, one of the world's great golf courses. So you know, let me just do the maths here. Five, West plays as five, six West plays as six. They are the par three, par four, two of the all-time great holes in the world. And I would suggest to you, Soph, if you can get yourself back left of five, which gives you an opportunity to watch them teeing off on six as well, that's going to be a great spot to watch from. And hopefully, you know, we've talked about all of these names. Hopefully one of the aforementioned South Australians is right there in and amongst it on Sunday afternoon, because you'll get the exclusive and Hooked on Sport will be very, very popular amongst all of the listeners when you're sitting down for your one-on-one 15 minutes with one of the South Australian winners, whether it's one of the Jacks or Wade or wouldn't Adam Bland be a story?
Oh, 100%. Well, speaking about golf holes, it's actually the finishing stretch at Royal Melbourne. Those last three holes that are on the Grange, on the Royal Melbourne East, just absolutely incredible. And like we spoke about, the Asia Pacific Amateur was there. It was won by an Aussie, Jasper Stubbs, over Wen Yi-ding. And final stretch of holes, it's on YouTube. I encourage our listeners to look at it because it's exactly how I expect Royal Melbourne to play. It's fast, it's firm, it's vicious. And wow, watching these boys play these final stretch is incredible. It's some of the most thrilling golf that I watched at the time, and it's absolutely incredible. And one of our SA boys was playing in that tournament. It's Jack Buchanan. And do you know what? He's a South Australian that I think we should be watching out for. He has played a lot on the Melbourne Sand Belt. And like you said, he's trending at the moment. We spoke about him trying to get his, well, DP World Tour card through the qualifying. And you spoke about how he lost his three wood, he lost his driver and he had to play for three wood. He was only a few shots shy of getting his card in his through the qualifying. He's ended up getting his card anyways. And I think Jack Buchanan, that is a South Australian that I'll be looking out for.
Bucket list for me, Soph, is Royal Melbourne Composite. I've been lucky enough to play West and East, but if I could ever play the composite course, that would be something special. I get chills down my spine just thinking about the holes that we've been talking about. But I need to segue, because we're going to bring our focus back into South Australia and back to some local golf, because you and I are very, very passionate about South Australian golf each week. We have our course in focus, and we have decided to go, after heading south to Mount Compass a fortnight ago, we're going north to the heart of the Barossa, and I know you love a red wine, and I know you love your golf as well. So this seemed like the perfect spot to be, Tanunda Pines Golf Club. It's an incredible story. Tanunda has had a golf course for 112 years. It was first founded in 1913, but it's been in many iterations and different ownership structures since then. Since 1939, Tanunda Pines has been at its current venue in Roland Flat, which is around about 3-4 kilometres just to the west of Tanunda. Murray Craft, it only started as 9 holes and was a tin shed for a clubhouse. So, if you know, a little bit different these days. Murray Crafter, that name again. I think we're going to talk about Crafter a lot when we talk about South Australian golf courses, the surname Crafter. But it was Murray Crafter who did an overhaul of the course in the 70s. More recently, there's been numerous reroutings. I think it's a good mix now with returnable nine, so they've done a great job of setting it up. There's a resort alongside. Of course, we're in the heart of the Barossa wine region. It was taken over. It was really in trouble in about the year 2000. It was taken over by a group called Seven Under. In 2003, I think it was, Soph, it was a group of seven families who took it under its wing when it was really struggling. They did an incredible job. It got resold in 2022 to a group called Balmoral Resort. Now, I think I'm right in saying this, but Stephen Connor is involved in Balmoral Resort. Stephen Connor was the name that we were talking about 2 weeks ago as part of Capital Line Investments, who was the owner of Mount Compass Golf Course. So you know full well that if Stephen Connor is actually involved, that we are going to see a genuine love of golf and the golf course there at Tanunda. And I think that's particularly exciting. We are going to see a world-class golf course there, I think. Hard to believe it hasn't happened yet with the traffic that it gets through the region. But it's exciting to see that a solid golf course is potentially going to be further elevated. When was the last time you played there?
Well, my boyfriend's actually a Barossa boy, so I managed to get up there quite a few times. So only a few months ago did I play Tanunda. I love it. It's a great country course. It's pretty tricky. Like we said, a lot of dog legs, but it's really their greens. Now, there is a local trick with their greens, but I don't divulge local tricks. I've been told this and I'm keeping it tight-lipped. It's not a practice hack. I'm not telling anyone. I've played an SA amateur there, so I'm definitely not telling anyone because I have used it to my advantage multiple times. So there is a trick to play their greens, but they are fairly tricky. A lot of two tiers. I love their par fives there. A lot of them are reachable, but they're risky. They're risky off the tee. There's bunkers in place. They're very strategic. I absolutely love this golf course. It's particularly, I think, my favorite hole. I reckon there has been a rerouting, so I apologize if I've got the routing wrong. It's the seventh hole. It's a par four. It's a tee that's raised, which just gives you beautiful views. It's a slight dogleg to the left. It's a small green that's two-tiered. It's quite a narrow entranceway with two bunkers, and then it drops off on both sides. It's a beautiful hole. I think the tee shot is just awesome. You can take it on straight over the left-hand side and it actually widens out. But by God, if you go right, you're in some serious grief. And if you go left, you're even in further grief. So I just think it's a beautiful course. A lot of strategy is needed around there.
Yeah, geez, you're right. The rerouting has thrown me a bit because I think you might now be talking about six. What did you say? Seven. I think it might actually be four now.
I
could be wrong too. So who knows? But strangely enough, I know exactly the hole you're talking about, and I do love that tee shot as well. I think being a left-hander, I think it does suit me because it does sort of shuffle a little bit right to left, and you've got a beautiful, slightly uphill to the green, but it is a wonderful hole. You touched on it, Soph, and I'm just going to reiterate it. The greens complexes there are world-class. So we talked about Blackwood maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I reckon that they've got 12 or 13 absolutely world-class greens complexes, and then maybe 3 or 4 that are just a little bit pedestrian and a bit forgettable. But I reckon every hole you play at Tanunda, there is a green that you approach to that you just think, wow, this is good fun. So there's some elevation change in the green. There's some drop-offs. There's some wonderful bunkering. I think it is really, really well done for a country course. And that is the one thing that stands out to me, is that all 18 greens complexes are something that I reckon you could take to any part of the world and people would say, yeah, this is a really good quality golf course just from front edge of green to back edge of green alone, I think is absolutely spectacular.
Well, all of the green complexes are completely different. Like, I'm just running it through my head right now, and I'm thinking about the 16th hole par three. It's a short par three, but gosh, that green is really, really tricky. It's a small green. There's like a ridge running through the middle of it. Yep. From memory, it slopes left to right. It may be front to back. It's incredibly difficult. But then you go on to the next hole, which is for the women, it's a par five, dogleg right. For the men, I think it plays as a par four. It's bunkers all off the tee on the right-hand side. You run out of fairway if you hit the ball straight, so you really do have to shape it. Again, probably suited to a lefty like yourself, so you probably love the hole. But then the green is completely different. Again, you're coming at it from height, but there's so much slope and subtle subtle slopes in that green, whilst the green before it, it's quite severe. I don't know. I think it's a beautiful course. And do you know what? Some really good wine at the end of the round as well.
Regardless, doesn't matter how badly you've played, you've always got some comfort red wine to get you through at the end. Is there a gripe for you?
Look, there is a slight gripe with me. The rerouting, like you spoke about, I think is great because it does mean that your nines always finish close to the clubhouse whilst before you basically ended up at the opposite side of the property and, you know, if you needed to get a drink, well, bad luck. And it does get quite hot and quite cold there as well. But now there's slightly different grasses in their greens. And they used to be, I think, I can't remember off the top of my head, maybe like the first six were a certain type of grass. The ball reacted a certain kind of way when it landed. And then it was the last 12 were a completely different type of grass. Now I've got no idea what's going on, which sometimes means I don't quite know how my ball's going to react. And it makes me a bit wary around the course because I'm not sure what's going to happen. So that's probably my only gripe. But at the same time, the rerouting's so good. It kind of is what it is.
Fair enough. If there was one thing I had a little bit of a gripe about, that there are probably two or three or four fairways that are sort of a bit bunched together and a bit narrow with, you know, almost like you've got to hit the absolutely perfect shot or you've got nothing. You end up in the line of trees and with no capacity to play out of it. And I would think, and this, I'm just going on what the current routing is. There is 12 and 15 that play up and then back. So 15 is on the northernmost part of the course. It's a par five that is from that elevated section. And you know where the elevated section is. It's got 13 with the beautiful downhill par three. On the edge of it is the, I think it might be the fourth that you were referring to, Soph, which is the elevated tee shot. So that mound that's over instead of the middle northern part of the course, 15th is the hole that plays in completely the opposite direction to the par three and is a par five out with, you know, out of bounds on the left-hand side. If you come one hole south of that, the 12th, both of those holes are pretty narrow sort of holes with tree lined either side. And I just reckon that with some smart sort of layering, maybe just take that middle line of trees out and open that up and make that sort of almost a bit of a double fairway with some bunkers in between, that you could have something world class. I'm almost thinking a bit like what Neil Crafter did with 15 and 16 at Mount Compass. Now, maybe there's not quite as much space there, but I do think with some just realigning the tee lines and those sorts of things, that maybe you could create quite a bit of space in the hitting areas for both of those holes. And the same thing, I think, at 10 and 18, which is the two par five. So 10 is that double dogleg par five, which is a quirky little hole, but I sort of like. And 18 is the par five that comes back into the clubhouse, which is kind of narrow as well. And I just wonder if you took out the trees between both of those fairways, that you could make something absolutely spectacular on the way out on 10 and on the way in on 18. But look, hey, what do I know? I'm not a golf course architect. I don't expect I am, but I just reckon if I know what architects are thinking, that that would be something they would like to see. Rather than have narrow shoots with tree lines either side, if you can broaden out those fairways, subtly make it so that it's not dangerous and you can open out play for both, that might be something that I could probably see at Tanunda. But you know what? Sometimes a narrow fairway is not a bad thing. You know, the seventh at the Masters at Augusta National is a narrow tee shot, and no one seems to grizzle about Augusta National either.
It's a bit of a bad luck. Hookie, I didn't know where you're going with that. I was thinking Tanunda. Oh, actually, it was my choice to do Tanunda. I was forward to it, and I was thinking there's no blind tee shots at Tanunda, so I don't know what he's going to use as his gripe. There's only one blind approach shot. He might be talking about that one. So, you know what? Narrow tee shots is now the complaint.
Yeah, I've moved on. Yeah. Nice to know that I could still find a gripe. Hey, have you got a favourite hole here?
Well, I've told you about it already. But I actually, do you know what? Funny enough, I really like the 18th hole. I think that par five is, I know it's a narrow shoot off the tee. And actually, that is a blind tee shot. So there you go. Talking about not thinking there's any blind tee shots. You can't see your ball land there. It's just really tricky. Those bunkers off the tee for me are really in play. So taking driver isn't necessarily the answer for me. But if I take driver and get a good drive away, I have a good crack at the green. But then it's surrounded by bunkers. It's a two-tiered green. You've got then the gallery from the clubhouse that can see me, of probably with a few Shirazes under their belts and ready to have a crack as soon as I attempt to have a crack at the green. So
who's
actually
this
really,
Sheila playing on our course?
But I actually really love the 18th hole. I think it's a really risk-reward hole, which I quite enjoy. It gives a bit of a thrill. You can easily bogey it, but I could finish with, you never know, an eagle.
Yeah, you are the sort of player who could maybe rustle up an eagle. I'm just happy to tap it in for par on a par five. There's so many more opportunities for me to make a stupid mistake. The 13th is the downhill par three. It is the iconic hole of the golf course, and I reckon that you just turn up at Tanunda for no other reason just to get around and play the 13th. It is amazing. You know, those downhill par threes, the ball just stays up in the air forever, I always find pretty spectacular. But I think the par five night, Sophie, you've identified it really well. The par fives at Tanunda are extraordinarily good for a country course. And I would argue that here in South Australia, we don't have many great par fives. You go around all of the tier ones and tell me the par five that really stands out to you. And I don't know that there's one that is really world class, but I reckon the par fives at Tanunda are extraordinarily good. And my favorite is the ninth, the par five that comes back towards the club. Maybe it suits me because there is that slight right to left dogleg. It's long, but it's fair. It's a good green complex. It's really interesting. It's one I love to play. So can I just wrap this up? I just had a look at the price guide for Tanunda. It's still $45 to play that course during the week and $55 to play it on a weekend. So if you're a golfer on a bit of a budget and you're happy to drive up the Northern Expressway onto Gomersals Road, it's so fast now. It's an hour from, you know, Prospect, if you like. $45 to play that course during the week is extraordinary value.
Oh, absolutely ridiculous. But I also mean, Hooky, make a weekend out of it. The Novotel's right across the road.
Correct.
Go to some wineries in the lovely Barossa region. Whilst you're at it, we're probably going to have to add it to our list, but go to the Barossa Valley Golf Course down at Nuriupta, another amazing golf course. Why not? Go and play Kapunda. It's a great nine-holer. I mean, we're talking about Tanunda now, but go make a weekend out of it. $45 or $55, that's just incredible.
Yeah, it's an absolute bargain. It's a great place to play. It's Murray Crafter. It's got the Crafter South Australian fingerprints all over it. And I can only encourage you to get out there and have a crack. That is well worth the trip. I've got a couple of mates that I work with who are only recently into golf, and they're always looking for a bit of a bargain, these guys. Took them up to Tanunda, absolutely loves it, had an absolute ball of a time. So can't promote it enough. So to wrap us up, let's talk about what is coming up this week, because you and Wallace both are going to be covering the Australian Open for Hooked On Sport. I'm excited to see you in and amongst the media pack. We're going to try, and, you know, we'll cross fingers and toes here, but we are trying to get little daily episodes up. Hopefully you're going to have a chat to a number of, in particular, the South Australian players as they come off the course.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I want to speak to some spectators. We've got some other South Australians there, some greenskeepers there that I can't wait to speak to as well, some rules officials potentially. So we're trying to get a bit of a South Australian approach to the Aussie Open. I don't think anyone else is doing that, and I'm really excited to. I've got some friends who are coming who I think are a bit nervous that I might be shoving a microphone in their face to tell me about their experiences. They may be wearing a Rory fan club hat, and you know what? They can wear it when I'm interviewing them. I won't have mine on, but they can have theirs.
Have you got Sophie's practice hack to get us away?
Oh, I thought I almost got away with it, but not quite. You're making me do a practice hack. I'm already nervous about having to go to the media accreditation. Well, not having to, but getting my media accreditation. Look, Cookie, it's pretty simple. My practice hacks are always pretty simple. This one is the way you practice. Look, a lot of people actually just don't ever practice, Hookie. I'm looking at you. But look, no, the way you should practice at golf is you should try and make it like you're on a golf course, which means don't spend all your time doing this technical practice and exactly what your coach has said. Obviously do that, spend some time. But then you've got to come up with some competitive drills. Try and put yourself under pressure. It's really important. You can get as technical as you like, but guess what? That's not what gets you around a course. That's not what gets your little white ball in that little hole. You've got to put yourself under some pressure.
Have a great Sophie Christmas. Wallace, enjoy your time over there as well. But looking forward to you guys reporting back in. It's going to be an amazing event. I can't wait to see it, and I can't wait to get all of your reports as well.
Yeah, Wallace has got a tough task. He's got to keep the fangirl of me down, absolutely down. It's going to be pretty tough. I have to admit, you don't want to see what I last wore at the last Australian Open that I went to and saw Rory McIlroy play. That is an improvement, trust me.
I'm just a little bit concerned the way you talked about the Novotel at Tanunda Pines that we're going to see a booking for Hilditch / McIlroy. Poor old Darcy O'Neill, just I'll have a beer with him in the bar. He'll come back to us eventually.
All right, thanks guys, pleasure as always.
With the last putt sunk, that's a wrap on this golf edition of Hooked on Sport. Thanks for listening. Help us meet more golfers just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company on the next golf edition of Hooked on Sport.